Hello and welcome. This is Andrew Gettert. I've been practicing herbal medicine for over 25 years, specializing in results. Today's topic is an herb drug interaction update. It's really important to notice that one of our goals today is to discuss how you can safely recommend health concerns formulas. If you're interested in more background information, actually one of the questions in advance is what's a comprehensive program on herb drug interactions. It's the program that we created a few years ago, and it's called the Practitioner's Guide to Herb Drug Interactions and Safety and Herb Drug Interactions Case Review. And in these continuing education classes, I actually interview experts in the field, including one of my colleagues, Robert, who has been practicing herbal medicine 25 years, and he also used to teach at Tufts University in back east. So this is really just in kind of a tune-up in service of using our products. But if you really want to know the foundational information about herb drug interactions, I suggest that you enroll in the programs. They're very exciting. It's a lot of good information in them. Okay, so what we're going to do today, our goals are today, is review how you can treat medicated patients with health concerns formula safely. Also to gain review some of the basics of herb drug interactions and understand that herb drug interactions can be positive as well as negative. So one of the things that's important is I really try to walk the walk and talk the talk as much as possible. So about 2 weeks ago I gave a class on athletic performance in herbs. And this past weekend, I was actually competing in the Northern California tennis finals, and it was brutal out there. I was in Oakley, California with my teammates. It was 100 degrees Fahrenheit at 5 p.m. Basically, we couldn't go inside because we were waiting for the match to begin, so we kind of huddled in a little bit of shade near the pool, and I saw the thermometer, it said like 90 degrees Fahrenheit or whatever. So in preparing for the tennis match, which was, again, Northern California finals, I had to use all the tools that I presented in the class about how to perform, how to use herbs for performance enhancement, injury treatment, as well as recovery. So anytime you're playing a couple hours in 95 degree heat, you've got to be prepared and you've got to know how to recover. So those are some of the things that I covered in the workshop a few weeks ago. Now, in terms of herb-drug interactions, when I started practicing in the 80s, I don't think nobody used the term herb-drug interactions. A few people actually would ask me about the use of herbs and Coumadin. But that was about it. And then in the 90s, people started talking about herb-drug interactions, and I enrolled in everybody's class. I was in the front of the room copiously taking notes. If they wrote an article or somebody else wrote an article, I read it. If they wrote a book, I bought it. And it became quickly clear to me that all these people speaking on herb-drug interactions, none of them really used herbs clinically. And so I realized a great need is to present clinical information, not textbook, not theoretical information about herb-drug interactions. And that's what this, the updates and the three other classes that I offer are really supposed to be about. How can you continue to clinically use herbs and keep the herb, and how can you respond if you get asked questions about herb-drug interactions? So a lot of dealing with herb-drug interactions is understanding the basics, and then also knowing how to communicate with your patients and other health professionals as well. So herb-drug interactions really has to do with three men walk into a bar. And I know some of the women particularly are going, oh, brother, I've heard this story a million times. Well, you probably haven't heard quite this story. So three men walk into a bar, and what's interesting is all three order exactly the same alcoholic drinks. But what's unusual is their reaction. Even though they all have the same amount of alcohol, two or three glasses of wine or two or three beers, one is in the bathroom puking his guts out because it's so strong and he feels dizzy and sick. One is going, well, you know, I don't really feel anything. And the other's going, I've got the best buzz in my life. I am feeling great. So in other words, three people have the exact same dosage of alcohol, they all react differently. And that's really a lot of what herb-drug interactions is about. So herbs can positively interact with drugs. So anytime we use herbs to correct a drug side effect, that's positively using herb-drug interaction. Important review point to review is that the biggest challenges are not herb-drug interactions, they're herb-food interactions and drug-drug interactions. And, you know, again, sometimes I try to be as nice as possible to everybody, but some people don't warrant it. And there have been occasions where I have to tell doctors, why are you being hostile to the herbs? And every case, they go, oh, but I'm not hostile. And they go, well, what's the issue? So the real issue, and again, you know, I know doctors in the hospital. A good friend of mine practices in the hospital. Part of the problem is that they read publications that are negatively biased towards herbs and positively biased in terms of pharmaceuticals. And a great example of that is JAMA, Journal of American Medical Association. They latch on. If you want to get your herb study published in JAMA, it's very easy. All it has to do is be negative. And if you have a slightest benefit from a pharmaceutical and you want to sell a lot of stock, you publish the results in JAMA. So, you know, a lot of these medical journals are really nothing but advertising for drug products. And I'm not the first person to say that. Actually, one of the editors of the British Journal of Medicine actually quit because he goes, you know, all we're doing is pumping drugs. We're not really providing information to the public. So if you really go point to point with doctors, what are their real and pharmacists? What are their concerns about herbs? The concerns are safety. And this is why you want to latch on to the fact that we use health concerns products, because health concerns products have over a 25-year success rate and safety rate. They want to know about purity. They've been heard about adulteration. Well, that's why we are careful to carefully screen and double-check all the ingredients and all the formulas, both through the senses but also through the latest analytical technology, to make sure that what we say is in the product is in the product. And some of our products are actually triple checked in terms of the identity. So the third thing that they're concerned about with herbs is effectiveness. And the effectiveness of our products is supported by the use of our resource materials, such as our clinical handbook, the website healthconcerns.com/pro, and the programs like this that you're listening to. So the chief herbs of concern are grapefruit juice and St. John's wort. Drugs of concern include Coumadin, digoxin, psychiatric medicine, and transplant medications. The main method to minimize herb-drug interactions is to take herbs and drugs 2 hours apart. In general, herbs should be taken on an empty stomach. So if they don't agree with you taking on an empty stomach, they can be taken with meals. It's just that they compete with meals. So you want to use the Health Concerns Clinical Handbook to your best benefit. And we do have tips on not only what's in the formula and how it works, but how to take the formula as well. But in general, herbs should be taken on an empty stomach because they have better absorption. A clinical tip: if the drug is to be taken on an empty stomach, don't take herbs and supplements at the same time as the drug. So most drugs can be taken at any time, and it's easy for most American patients to take the drugs with meals. But the bottom line is, if it says take the drug on an empty stomach, take the drug on an empty stomach. Don't take herbs and supplements at the same time as that drug. You have to be very concerned with Asian patent medicines. Basically, about 75% of the worldwide counterfeits are basically out of China. And the real problem is that the government has chased a policy of growth at all costs. So modern China is the fastest growing culture in human civilization. So there's some really good things. And they've, you know, some of the people I visit within the herb business in China. I mean, literally 30 years ago, they were living in dirt, you know, dirt floors, and now they live in four-bedroom, you know, houses and stuff. 30 years ago, they were lucky if the family had one bicycle. Today, they drive, you know, SUVs and you know, Chevrolets and stuff just like we do. But one of the costs of this is that the government basically doesn't regulate products domestically made in China. Or if it does, it's very sporadic. And so you really have to be conscious. Anything made in China that's in pill form, you don't have any idea what's in it. So that's the chief problem. And there could be just good stuff in there. There could be additives that are just not holistic, or there could be pharmaceutical drugs. And so basically 98% of recalls for dietary supplements have to do with weight loss herbs, bodybuilding, and sexual enhancement products. And oftentimes these products are made in China and they have Western drugs. And what's really scary is that some of these Western drugs you know, have been banned in the United States, like steroids in bodybuilding. Some of the weight loss drugs that are in the Chinese patent medicines were recalled decades ago in the United States. And in the sexual enhancement field, the most common herbal products in China are basically generic Viagra with herbs. Now, the problem with that is that many of you may not know that Viagra was basically a failed blood pressure medication. As a side effect, it didn't lower blood pressure medication that well consistently, but it did do it for a limited period of time. As a side effect, they noticed that Viagra would cause help men get erections and become aroused. So that's how they developed Viagra. The take-home message here is it can kill you. If you're taking a couple of blood pressure medications and you take an herbal product that has Viagra that's not on the label, that can kill you. So be very, very careful about products made in China. So one of the greatest myths, and I do discuss this in some of the previous classes, is that antioxidants somehow negatively interact with chemotherapy and radiation therapies. And so one of the curious things is that the doctors don't talk about the foods that are antioxidants. So what's the problem? In other words, there's much more antioxidant activity in a cup of blueberries than there is in two tablets of you know, an antioxidant vitamin product. So they're not worried about the blueberries, but they are worried about the antioxidant vitamins. Sounds like a little biased to me. So basically, there is really very little information establishing the fact that antioxidants are harmful to cancer patients. There's a lot of information that indicates that blueberries and healthful fruits, vegetables, and supplements can be very helpful, have a positive interaction with chemotherapy and radiation. How do we manage this in a real-life American practice? Well, sometimes we just say, take your antioxidants before you go to chemotherapy, before starting chemotherapy or radiation therapy, and then continue after chemo and radiation therapy. That's one style. Another style is to just say, well, don't take the antioxidants or the fruits and vegetables on the day that you get chemotherapy and radiation therapy. The bottom line is that there's really no solid information that antioxidants are harmful, that negatively react with chemotherapy and radiation therapy, and substantial information that suggests that they may be helpful. But you may not have to take them on the same day. So if you know that's going to keep the doctor in the patient's court, that's okay. But there's really little scientific rationale behind this thing of don't take antioxidants in pill form. You can eat all the blueberry antioxidants you want, but not in pill form. That doesn't make any sense. And basically, those of you who like to do internet searches and want more information, there's a medical doctor from the Chicago area named Ken Block. He's been treating cancer patients for over 25 years. He published a study showing that antioxidants and other vitamins, herbs, and nutritional supplements greatly help survival of cancer patients. And McCulloch is a colleague in Northern California, and his paper done in conjunction with the Pine Street Clinic basically has the same outcomes, that people taking herbs, vitamins, and nutritional supplements have much better outcomes than those that don't get herbs, vitamins, and nutritional supplements. And there specifically, we're talking about cancer patients. Again, there's a wealth of information on our website. One of the basic informations you should familiarize yourself with is the newsletter I wrote, Volume 11, Number 1. And there's also an update, which I update this information as more information becomes known. So another positive herb-drug interaction is fish oil and statins. And again, I'm not suggesting that you necessarily take fish oil, nutritional supplements and drugs at the same time. I usually suggest that you take them apart. But the bottom line is that there is wonderful synergistic activity. If people have to be on statins, and I think that class of medication is particularly fraught with problems. But if a client has to be on a statin, fish oil is helpful because it will reduce high triglycerides. Triglycerides are not really affected so much by statins. And then more importantly, one of the risks of heart disease is low HDL, which is the protective lipid fraction of cholesterol. So one of the benefits of fish oil, including our EPAC krill oil, is that that will help build up HDL, the healthy cholesterol, as well as lower triglycerides, which are not affected by statins. So that's just one example of a positive herb-drug interaction. I want to spend some time. There are some extra questions that were submitted in advance, and we always deal with the questions that are submitted in advance first. If you do have an additional question, I can get to it. You can type in a quick question, one or two sentences to the right of your screen. There's a box. But there were a number of people wrote in about blood pressure lowering medications, and so I want to give you some information about that, blood pressure lowering and blood sugar regulating. So there are literally millions of people on this combination, and I'll discuss a case study in a little bit. Basically millions of people take a diabetes medication, and in the United States, certainly Northern California, metformin, used to be called glucophage, which is the trade name, is probably the most common in Northern California diabetes treatment. So they're on metformin, they're on one or more high blood pressure medications, and then they may be on additional, like an anti-cholesterol, like a statin. And I'll go ahead and mention the case history now. One of the clients came to our practice, and she was basically prescribed this cocktail of metformin, two high blood pressure medications, and Lipitor, which is a statin. Now, what's really funny is that she actually worked in the chemistry department of a major university, and she was in her 40s and had a heart attack. Now, one of the most important take-home messages today is that breast cancer is not the leading cause of death in women. It's heart disease. So don't forget the women and the heart. And so anyway, she had a heart attack, was put on this cocktail that millions of men and women are on. And the chemistry professor said, oh, I know that you're on medication. I'd be interested in looking at them. So she actually brought in the names of all her formulas, Lipitor, the two high blood pressure medications, and metformin. And this chemist did what almost no frontline physicians do. He actually went into the web, went into the chemical formula of the medications, and then he basically looked at the interaction between the chemicals used in the medicine with one another, and the chemist came up with the conclusion that this was unsafe based on chemistry, right? Yet millions of people are on this thing. So he basically said, I'm not a medical doctor, but I try to get off this stuff as soon as possible. And so the reason for coming to me was, how can I get off all this stuff? And I said, well, you have to do that carefully, slowly, and deliberately. And the first thing we're going to target is the Lipitor, or any statin. And so we worked with her for a while and got the lipids controlled with our product Polylipid, and that's a very, very safe formula. It's a researched formula, and you only need to take two tablets a day. So she started with the the formula polylipid. And then basically, since she had about 20 pounds to lose, we recommended that she continue on her exercise program. We also recommended a stress reduction program. And in time, we basically were able to have her slowly reduce the metforminin and use the health concerns formula Lean-Tain GT and the health concerns formula Green Excellent. And the bottom line is she was able to get off the metformin. She was able to lose the 20 pounds, and she was able to get by on just taking a modest amount of blood pressure lowering medications. So that gives you a sense of, number one, how dangerous some of these medications are, and number two, the promise, and then the strategy of how to put this all together. So my strategy is always to withdraw the high blood pressure medications last. And some people, in order to control their blood pressure, must take medication, or sometimes herbs are just not enough. So there's a Colorado physician named Bob Roundtree, and he has termed pharmacocentric. And he's noticed that when he goes to medical conferences, which are basically drug conferences, he notices that the pharmaceutical companies would much prefer the clinicians give more medicine, more drugs to bring blood sugar down rather than use herbs. So this is self-evident, really. So these are some health concerns formulas that lower or balance blood sugar. And they are Kyrowin, Myrtle-Seng, Astra Essence, and Green Excellent. We aren't going to have a time to talk about all these in great detail. The information about these is found in the Health Concerns Clinical Handbook. Basically, the handbook is available on CD. The information is on our website, healthconcerns.com/pro. And there's also a hard copy available. So if you do need to know how to get a Health Concerns Clinical Handbook, please email or call our office. So Kyrowin is a really exciting formula. Again, we won't have time to talk about that, but if I had to pick one blood sugar balancing or lowering formula to put all diabetics on, or pre-diabetics on in addition, it would be the Kyrowin. This basically makes the cells more sensitive to insulin, and this is what we want to do. Myrtle-Seng is an American ginseng crepe myrtle formula that has been shown to lower blood sugar. Astra Essence is a balancing formula on blood sugar. So this can be good particularly when your clients swing between hypoglycemia and hyperglycemia. And lastly, Green Excellent is a green coffee extract formula. This is one of the original researched green coffee extract formulas. Dr. Oz mentions one, and that's like what's that he mentions the name of its name in the mass market or the retail stores. We use the same product, but we call it Green Excellent for the health professional market. Anyway, this client I mentioned found that the Green Excellent was the single most encouraging thing that she took in terms of balancing her blood sugar. And then the Lean-Tain GT, which we'll talk about in a minute, was useful to help her lose the weight. And of course, her exercise program was also very useful. So we have additional formulas that can be useful for diabetes and pre-diabetic patients. Pre-diabetes is also known as Syndrome X or metabolic syndrome. So the Kyrowin is the one formula I would recommend if you could only pick one formula. If you can take a more comprehensive TCM approach, I would combine the Kyrowin long term with a short or medium term TCM approach, because that can be very, very useful. So formulas like Myrtle-Seng, Astra Essence, that's more like the TCM approach, whereas Kyrowin comes out of the food therapy and also out of nutritional supplements. So my mentor, Feng Feng, got, you know, amazing results. And I didn't just say he was a master herbalist. His other students did as well. And he got masterful results, number one, because he knew how to communicate with people. Number two, he had a vast knowledge of herbs. Number three, he always recommended, or whenever possible, recommended food therapy. And four, he recommended lifestyle modifications. And so I tend to think of the nutritional supplements like fish oil, like Kyrowin, as food therapy. So hopefully that puts it in proper context. So we did discuss the metformin case study. Now we want to go on to another positive herb-drug interaction. So the herb Coriolis, it's also known as turkey tail, has been well established in terms of its ability to help chemo and radiation therapy patients and help prolong their life standard, quality of life. And you can read the research in the Health Concerns Clinical Handbook. Our formula is called Coriolis PS, and it's a polysaccharide extract of Coriolis, and it's a water extract. And so it's basically in China and Japan, they use a specific dosages of Coriolis in water extract form. And the important take-home message is if you want to really use this, we would suggest a 9 to 12 tablets a day. And what some cancer patients do is they actually grind the tablets in a coffee grinder and they add them to a medicinal smoothie. So whether you take them that way or just take the 9 tablets with plenty of water, basically the results are very exciting in terms of using Coriolis along with chemo and radiotherapy in order to extend people's life, improve their quantity of life and their quality of life as well. Now another positive herb-drug interaction is the enoki mushroom and the green tea extract that's in Leantane GT. And so you say, well, where's the herb? Where's the drug? Well, I'm sort of playing devil's advocate or giving you some interesting inside information. I'm not sure which, but that if caffeine were newly discovered, it would be classified as a drug and it would cost $200 million in order to be a new drug, and it would probably be prescription only. So it's actually the caffeine in the green tea and probably the theophylline compounds that give it sort of an herb-drug interaction within the green tea. Now green tea is one of the, or any kind of tea, is one of the safest things on earth. And then enoki mushrooms are widely used in Asia as a food. You can also find them in gourmet stores in the United States. And so this is a specific extract of enoki mushroom and a specific extract of green tea. And in this dosage, it can be very, very effective in terms of helping people reduce their cravings and also help support weight loss. And so the client I mentioned that went to see the chemistry professor, she used this along with the green excellent in order to help reduce weight and balance her blood sugar. Green tea and black tea as well has some modest effects also in regulating blood sugar and helping people with heart disease as well. Another synergistic, this is not really an herb-drug interaction, but this is a synergistic reaction that has been well documented in the Western literature. Basically, the brilliance of the Chinese is that they've developed Chinese medicine over 2,000 years, maybe even more. And so 2,000 years ago, they were using astragalus. I believe they were using dongguei, which is more of the Chinese pronunciation. The American pronunciation might be dong quai. Dongguei is more of a Chinese pronunciation. Anyway, they've been using this combination for 1,000 years or more, and we find out that they've actually, I believe, according to Bensky, they've been using a 5-to-1 ratio, 5 parts of astragalus to 1 part dongguei, for something like since the 1200s, for like 700 years. Right, 5-to-1. Well, in the past 50 years, they've done research that shows, yes, indeed, if you use astragalus 5 parts to dongguei 1 part, basically you are getting much better blood tonification than using either astragalus by itself, dongguei by itself, or a different combination. So I'm really interested in using herbs traditionally, and I'm excited by the possibility of using modern science to validate the ancient wisdom. So that's part of the way we found it. I founded Health Concerns over 25 years ago. So another positive herb-drug interaction is Shazan Bedreem's and melatonin. So one of the people actually asked, how best can I take melatonin? Well, the take-home message there is that the best way to use melatonin is to start at 0.5 micrograms, that's mcg a day, and then build up slowly over time. And so so you want to start off with 500 micrograms a day, which is basically half a milligram a day. And then you want to slowly go up to about 3 grams a day. It's kind of the maximum dosage to promote sleep. So start low, gradually increase, because some people will have better results at half a milligram than 3 milligrams. So sometimes the right amount of a nutrient is more important than a lot of the nutrient. And this is sometimes true with herbs as well. The take-home message here is that sometimes you have clients that have, you know, terrible sleep, and some of them have been addicted to sleep medications. And the only way, and one of the best strategies is to take, that I found, is to take herbal medicine. And sometimes we use formulas like Calm Spirit and Shenjem during the day and take Shazan Bedreem's at night. Sometimes if it's a real chronic problem, we would use Calm Spirit or Shenjem during the day, and then we would use a combination of Shazan Bedreem's and melatonin. And again, we would typically take 2 or 3 tablets of Shazan Bedreem's, and at the same time, about a half an hour before bed, you can take anywhere from half a milligram to 3 milligrams of melatonin at the same time. And I get asked all the time, well, what do you do if you wake up? Well, if you wake up, I probably would just take the two or three tablets of Shazan Bedreem's. Basically, I'm going to be going covering this material a little bit quickly for some people. This webinar will be posted to our website within a few days. So rather than revisit the whole webinar right now, what I'm suggesting that you do is listen to it now. Listen to it in a few days when that becomes available, and then listen to it in about 3 to 6 months as a refresher course. Okay, so now we're going to present cases from our herbal helpline practice. Okay, so the first one was a male patient who had hepatitis C. Now, one of the interesting things is that this is somebody who used drugs, alcohol and drugs for 20 or 30 years, and they were also a candidate for a liver transplant. And the practitioner had the client on Health Concerns formulas and was getting a little bit discouraged. And so, first of all, I can tell you that when I first studied Western herbology, they told me that basically takes a month of treatment, herbal treatment, for every year of illness. So if somebody's been dealing with drug and alcohol abuse for 30 years, they're going to need probably as a minimum 30 months of herbal therapy. So time is very important here. Since one of my specialties is gastrointestinal disease, I've seen quite a number of hepatitis C patients over the years. Now, if it's advanced cirrhosis, fibrosis in the liver, some of those clients, all you can do is keep them stable. In other words, they may not feel that much different from an herb, but they are not deteriorating as fast as other clients that don't take the herbs are. In some cases, that's the case. In some cases, they say, oh, I don't feel anything from the herbs, so what we do is say, well, why don't you go off of it for 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks? So they go off the herbs for 2 or 3 weeks, and then they go, wow, I didn't realize the herbs were helping me so much. And then in some cases, we can actually start to reverse and really work at regenerating and healing the liver. And the best case scenario is you have somebody who's really not that advanced. They've newly diagnosed hepatitis C and they don't have symptoms. Well, a lot of those people can be actually reversed. So the bottom line is that in this case, we suggested that she keep up the health concerns formulas, and we also suggested some alternate protocols. So there, I just want to mention that there are in-depth protocols in the Health Concerns Clinical Handbook, so please don't overlook that as an important source of herbal information. This is a very easy question. The client had basically stage three kidney disease, and they were undergoing chemotherapy, and the practitioner wanted to know if quiet digestion is safe. And so in this context, we said, absolutely, you know, quiet digestion is a great remedy for clients on chemotherapy because it helps reduce nausea. So when do we recommend taking it? Whenever the client has nausea or digestive upset due to chemotherapy. Now, ideally, if they get home and they feel nauseous, after the chemotherapy or radiation treatment, go ahead and take one or two tablets of quiet digestion. That's perfectly fine. And then what they might do is take a break on all other herbs until their gastrointestinal system heals, and then they go back on the Coriolis, PS, or other specific formulas. And there's many protocols in the handbook and also in my book, Healing Immune Disorders. So that's a really no-brainer question. Again, we would recommend the quiet digestion 2 hours apart from chemotherapy, but again, that's usually not a problem because the person gets chemo and then it takes them a couple hours to get home, and if they're still nauseous, then they can take quiet digestion. Okay, next question. Has a patient taking Gemzar, and this is like a chemotherapy drug that negatively affects the platelets. So what do we suggest? So we over the years I've worked with many cancer patients, and I'm very careful to talk about supporting them through Western therapy. If for some reason they're like in stage four and have rejected Western therapy, then we work with them with herbs also. I don't like to, if people are in stage one cancer, I don't like them to just use herbs for various legal and ethical reasons. But anyway, we've had a lot of experience so many of the chemo drugs negatively affect the platelets. And so in that context, we use Marrow Plus, which is a modern formula using the traditional blood building strategies, such as using astragalus and dongguè. And then also we use Cortiseng, that's spelled C-O-R-D-Y-S-E-N-G. And that's a very good formula to be used for clients that that have low platelets. So the dosage in this case would be 6 tablets a day of Marrow Plus, 6 tablets a day of Cortiseng. You can also use the equivalent dosage in Cortiseng powder. We also have that available in powder form. And then long term, we typically, especially if they're blood deficient, we would suggest continuing on Marrow Plus as long as they're blood deficient, and as long as they have an immune deficiency, which is usually what cancer is, we would suggest using the Cortiseng formula, which has Cordyceps, Ganoderma, which is also known as Ling Jir, and then it also has Astragalus, which is Wang Qi. The next question from our Herbal Helpline practice was, I have a patient taking Cortef, which is a bioidentical form of cortisone, over a year and a half for adrenal suppression. She's taking 35 milligrams and we'd like to get her off it. She's wondering if adrenosin would help her do this. So adrenosin is A-D-R-E-N-O-S-E-N. Absolutely, adrenosin was specifically formulated to help boost the adrenals. Typically, there's really no exact science, but usually we have either people take the same dosage of the bioidentical cortisone, and then with 4 to 6 tablets a day of adrenosin, and continue with that for 1 or 2 weeks, or the practitioner uses 4 to 6 tablets a day of adrenosin, and then starts slowly reducing the cortisone. And I do want to emphasize slowly, right? You don't want to go from 35 milligrams of cortisone to none overnight. You want to do that slowly. And in some of the other herb-drug interaction webinars, I discuss how to get people off steroids and what the best policy is. So we talk about that. So the bottom line is the conservative dosage of the adrenosine is 2 tablets twice a day. If you really need it and the patient still feels tired, you can go up to 6 tablets a day without any problem. Okay, I got a lot of questions, a fair lot of questions about thyroid issues to our herbal helpline practice. And so I want to answer both of the questions generally. I've talked a lot about this in other webinars. For people that have moderate to severe low thyroid, I do believe in medication, and I believe in natural medication, and the natural medication is called Armour Thyroid, and that's available through prescription only. For mild cases of hypothyroid, we usually recommend the adrenosine because that helps benefit the thyroid as well as the adrenals. The adrenals can become very taxed if the thyroid is low. And then we typically would recommend a TCM constitutional tonic. And one that I think of often with hypothyroid conditions is the Romania 8. So we typically would use adrenosine and Romania 8 for low thyroid conditions. For moderately low thyroid, we would suggest the medication. For severe low thyroid, we suggest the medication. Now, for hyperthyroid, one of the formulas that we use in this case is called 9-flavor tea, which is the yin tonic, which has some heat-clearing herbs. Now, sometimes in hyperthyroid conditions, we would also add calm spirit or clear heat if there's a lot of heat signs. So if there's like heart palpitations, we would use the 9-flavor tea and the calm spirit. If there's a tremendous amount of heat and swelling, we typically would use the 9-flavor tea with clear heat, which is used for systemic heat. Okay, the next question is one of the calls to our herbal helpline, the person wanted to know about Teasel for treatment of Lyme disease. Now, Teasel is the Western name of Shuduan, and Shuduan is found in our backbone formula, and this is something that wouldn't necessarily be bad for Lyme disease patients, but this one herb by itself is simply not enough. And some of the main proponent that I know of Teasel as a Lyme's treatment actually recommends the tincture, which isn't strong enough to really do too much. So yes, you could use backbone if a person has kidney yang deficiency and Lyme disease. But I really think we have some great protocols, and I discussed the protocols in our webinar called Herbal Approaches to Parasites and Lyme Disease. Many of these protocols are also discussed in my book, Healing Immune Disorders. And so I recommend a more comprehensive TCM approach rather than just Teasel, which is a good herb for kidney yang deficient back pain, but that's not enough to really treat Lyme disease. So if it's kidney yang deficiency and back pain, backbone with Teasel is a great formula. Otherwise, I would use other strategies for the treatment of Lyme disease. Okay, so now we get questions about high blood pressure and some more questions about high cholesterol and glycemic medications as well. So what is my strategy for people that have that are on high blood pressure medication? Well, the best case scenario is you get people before they're on blood pressure medication. Because sometimes when you get people started on blood pressure medication, they simply can't get off of it. And then some people, it's important to know, have congenitively high blood pressure. So my mom was skinny her whole life, and she had such bad uncontrolled high blood pressure that she, at one point, she was on 4 different high blood pressure medications. She was on a diuretic, she was on an ACE inhibitor, she was on a calcium blocker and a beta blocker all at the same time. So the Western strategy is, if one, well, you choose one from column A and one from column B, and sometimes also one from column C and one for column D, kind of like ordering from a Chinese restaurant. So the bottom line is that some people can't get off of high blood pressure medications. Some people really need blood pressure medications in order to survive. But I believe that if you can get people before they start on high blood pressure medications, that's the best case scenario. So that's the one take-home message. One of the formulas that we have available for people with high blood pressure is called IBP, which stands for ideal blood pressure. And this is a nutritional and herbal approach. And we've had some pretty promising results so far. The take-home message is that IBP really should be taken for about 8 to 12 weeks before you decide that this is a good approach or not. So you don't just take one tablet and go, wow, my patient's blood pressure is higher, or it didn't change at all. So after about 2 to 3 months of therapy, then you can evaluate this formula. So because high blood pressure is so crucial, as it's a major risk for heart disease and stroke, I suggest working on other areas first. So with the client that worked in the chemistry department, we actually worked with getting her off the statins first. Second of all, we worked on getting her off the glycemic medication, namely the metformin, and then we may or may not be able to get her all the way off of the high blood pressure medication. But one of the strategies would be to use the IBP, and typically the person would use IBP. They would want to use about 10 servings a day of fruits and vegetables. This is well established as part of the DASH diet, capital D, capital A, capital S, capital H, the DASH diet, which stands for something like dietary approaches to stop hypertension. And this is a clinically proven approach to high blood pressure. I also recommend a specific breathing protocol, which I don't really have time to describe right now, but the bottom line is the person really works at improving their breathing, more what they call diaphragmatic or abdominal breathing. So if you use IBP, if you take 10 servings a day of fruits and vegetables, if you work at diaphragmatic or abdominal breathing, you sure can reduce the high blood pressure medications in many but not all cases. So this is something that needs to be done slowly over time, and you must continually monitor the client. In addition, a caveat that I would say is you want to make sure clients are monitoring their own blood pressure. So for a client who says they're too busy to monitor their blood pressure, who says that they don't have a blood pressure blood pressure cuff, they don't can't get it, or it doesn't work, I would really work on other areas, namely the cholesterol and blood sugar, rather than the high blood pressure. Next scenario has to do with a 28-year-old patient that has a yeast infection for 3 months, and it's not been alleviated by over-the-counter medications, Diflucan and creams and prescribed. Well, this can be easily answered right out of our handbook and the healing immune disorders. We have a formula called vagostatin, which can be applied topically, and a real excellent formula called phyllostatin, which is spelled P-H-E-L-L-O-S-T-A-T-I-N, phyllostatin. And phyllostatin is a formula that I've developed over 20 years ago. And the idea of phyllostatin is to not only reduce the yeast count, many of the herbs are proven antifungal fighters, but also keep the yeast away. So one of the problems with these medications, and I do sometimes recommend them, is that they can lower the yeast count or lower the fungal count very effectively, but then the person goes off the medication and then the condition just flares up again. So and so the interaction question is, can you use Fillistatin along with Diflucan and topical medications like that cream it begins with an M, can't think of the exact name of it, but it's widely available. So there's no reason you couldn't use Fillistatin along with drug creams for yeast or Diflucan, which is an antifungal medication. Of course, we would want to take the drugs and the herbs 2 hours or more apart. We talked in great detail about lowering blood pressure medications. We talked about the best dosage of melatonin and how sometimes little is better than more. And then we discussed some of the herbs earlier, the best herbs for type 2 diabetes. But let me just put that one screen up. Kyrowin, I strongly recommend this either by itself or as the combination to TCM therapies. The TCM therapies are mainly myrtle seng, which contains American ginseng and crepe myrtle, which is another clinically proven blood sugar lowering ingredient. And then Astra Essence, which is also a TCM approach, which seems to help balance blood sugar, whether there's hypo or hyperglycemia. So those are the best herbal approaches. Let's see. Okay, there was a question that I don't really have time to answer completely, but do GI herbs interact with Chinese herbal medicine? Some of them do for sure. So you definitely do want to take GI drugs 2 hours apart from herbal medication. Another thing is you want to make sure that your clients read up on any kind of medications, particularly GI medications that they're on, because there can be some nasty and unintended side effects. So for instance, one of my clients, as you know, I work a lot with Crohn's and colitis patients, and one of the leading highly promoted drugs is called Remicade. And the client was actually taking herbs also, and they go, I keep getting a cold and flu, you know, must be these Chinese herbs. And I go, well, have you read the insert on the Remicade? No. Well, that drug is an immunosuppressive drug that is proven to show it can reduce, you know, to reduce the immune, the efficacy of the immune system. As a matter of fact, people can get tuberculosis and even cancer at risk for taking these anti-TNF drugs such as Remicade. So the bottom line is yes, you want to make sure to take herbal medicine and GI drugs 2 hours apart and really make sure that you and your clients are educated about the GI drugs, because some, particularly the absorbent drugs, can, if you take the absorbent drugs at the same time as the Chinese herbal medicine, the GI drug does its job really well. It absorbs all the Chinese herbal medicine and you get zero benefit from it. So that's one of the reasons we recommend this 2 hour or more window of herbs and drugs. Okay, so now we're going to go over some of the questions that have been submitted in advance. One of the practitioners asked about using berberine, which is a Chinese, as a constituent in Chinese herbs, for type 2 diabetes. Now, the reason I recommend Kyrowin rather than a Chinese herbal therapy like berberine is really an herbal drug. And the problem is that it does lower type 2 diabetes. It's a very cooling therapy, and there's a lot of side effects of taking this herbal drug. So if you really read the type 2 diabetes research, berberine, the herbal drug, actually definitely does lower blood sugar. The problem is 20 to 30% of the patients had to stop taking it because of gastrointestinal and other side effects. So the reason that I recommend the formulas for glycemic control that I do is because of the lack of side effects and or the established traditional safety. The use of berberine in type 2 diabetes is more of a modern nutraceutical idea that in my opinion doesn't work too well. Okay, so we did talk about getting off of blood pressure medications. A couple of people ask very general questions. So if you're interested in treating dementia, I suggest you look in the clinical handbook under dementia. Somebody asked about eye problems, really want to look at the look in the health concerns clinical handbook under eye problems. So I'm really going to try to just address the more specific questions that have come in. My friend Byron asked a very, very good question, as usual. He says, herbs to lower blood sugar is an excellent topic. What is the most effective dosage frequency? Well, I would say that you want to, if you're using herbs to lower blood sugar, like some of the herbs I recommended, you want to make sure that they're taking the herbs in at least 2 dosages, if not 3 dosages a day. So you don't want to take all your herbs at once, right? You want to take them in 2 or 3 divided dosages. And then as a reminder, I would suggest making sure that clients that are interested in going off blood sugar medications or lowering their blood sugar should adopt a low or no grain diet and a no or low sugar and sweetener diet, which includes artificial sweeteners. In previous webinars, I talked about some of the natural sweeteners I like. But the bottom line is the diet is very important, exercise is very important, and then taking the herbal formulas 2 or 3 times a day. I'd recommend all the clients take Kyrowin, and then I would recommend TCM formula based upon the signs and symptoms. Let's see, next question. A lot of people ask about blood pressure, and I think I answered that. A lot of people ask about blood pressure, metformin, and glucose lowering, and I think I've answered that. As I mentioned, somebody wants to know what the most comprehensive guide to herb-drug interactions is, and it's the 2 continuing education classes, this update, and then there was an update which I did last year as well. Okay, now we have some questions that have come in, and I will be trying to read them as quickly as I can. Basically, we're about out of time, so if you have any other 1 or 2 sentences, questions, I can probably answer them if I can, but now you want to submit them now. So the person has had many side effects from Celexia, and we reduce her dosage and is appearing to feel depressed. What can we do to help? So I've gotten some fantastic results with aspiration. And some cases we actually slowly withdraw the antidepressant while using the full dosage of aspiration. And the most dramatic case I got was with a therapist who was on 80 milligrams of Prozac, which is a pretty hefty dosage of Prozac. And she found that in a couple of months, about 3 to 4 months, I believe it was, she was able to go off the Prozac with the aspiration. And then what was really exciting to her is that she would get kind of sad and depressed on the weekends. So she took aspiration just on the weekends and did the job very nicely. So in the time we have, that's basically how much I can answer that question in the time available. I did do a specific webinar called Antidepressant Herbs. I'm not sure what the question is about Taiwan. It's a country in Asia. Let's see, can you repeat the 2 high health concerns formulas for metformin to be diminished? Okay, I think we mentioned the slide a few times. The main formula I would use to help people control their blood sugar naturally or to withdraw metformin would be the Kyrowin. And then I would probably use one of the 3 other, there's 4 formulas I would use. If the person's overweight, I would consider using the Lean-Tain GT. If they have a lot of kidney yin symptoms of kidney yin deficiency, I would use the Myrtle-Seng. If they had were very deficient, qi, yin and yang deficient, and they had more needed to balance their blood sugar, I would definitely use the Astra Essence. The particular case history I used, the client used a combination of Green Excellent, which is a green coffee extract. patented green coffee extract, the same one that Dr. Oz recommends, except this is the health professional version. And then we would use that, the Green Excellent, if a person wants a bitter that actually reduces blood sugar. So those are the specific formulas. The formulas that lower blood pressure, the main formula I would recommend for lowering blood pressure is the IBP. There's additional information in our literature about some of the other formulas, and the best way to answer that would be with a specific case history. So if you do have a specific history, I would suggest submitting that, sending us an email, and we'll answer that as soon as we can. As I mentioned, if people want to review, I'd suggest revisiting this webinar in a few days. And then to get most out of it, I'd come back to it. Now, you know, set your cell phone or your calendar 3 to 6 months in advance and revisit it, because this is a really good class. And the reason I say it's a good class is because I've attended all the other classes on our drug interactions, and this is probably the most clinically useful. Let's see. So with melatonin, how to treat insomnia for a person who works nights and has to sleep during the day? Well, melatonin might be a good formula to consider because of it it is a nutritional strategy to help restore melatonin, which is found in the brain. So you would want to use melatonin. You'd want to consult a professional company that supplies you with melatonin. But also, if people have a problem where they work nights and they sleep during the day, I would certainly consider using the Shazander Dreams to help a person fall asleep. And also, a clinical tip is that people who work the night shift, and I'm not talking about that the swing shift, I'm talking about the so-called graveyard shift, is that it tends to make the blood very weak. And if you look at these people, like the nurses and other people who work the graveyard shift, they typically have very low blood in terms of Chinese medicine. So we use formulas like Marrow Plus and the Shen Gem formula to help address the blood deficiency associated with this kind of insomnia. Somebody reminds me, thank you very much, the over-the-counter cream is called Monistat, that's used for yeast infections, and Myconazole, I believe, is the name of the medication. There was some really good information there about, my mom unfortunately passed about 5 years ago, but there's some information about hyperaldosteronism. And there's some other conditions. I think in my mom's case, actually it had to do with a breathing abnormality. So this is one of the reasons that breathing techniques can be very, very important for lowering blood pressure. So I want to thank Lynn for sharing that. I'm sorry, Joy, I can't get to that question because it's too long. And Taiwan patents. Okay, so the question is that there's some regulation in Taiwan, but there's a lot of products that are not made very well in Taiwan. So one of the things you might want to ask your supplier is, where is the formula actually made? Sometimes the companies make the herbs are from Taiwan, but it's made in the United States. I feel a lot more comfortable about that than products that are made in Asia. Another thing you might want to do is make sure that there's a U.S. distributor on the label. In other words, it might be made at Joe Blow Pharmacy in Taipei, Taiwan, but it's distributed by ABC Distributing in Northern California. Well, that's also a little bit better than straight out of Asian factory, because it's at least somebody in the United States is responsible, and you can call them if there's a problem. But there are a lot of cases of adulterated Asian patent medicines. There was a very good question about Neurontin and the interaction with herbs, and basically that's the kind of question that's best asked as a case study. But I will tell you that Neurontin is one of the most overhyped drugs of all time, and my colleague who works in the hospital thinks that Neurontin is basically a placebo. So there's no reason, we've had many, many clients on Neurontin that also take herbs. So there's no reason why a person on, that I can think of, that a person on Neurontin can't take Health Concerns formulas a few hours apart. Let's see. And the person asked about herb-drug interactions with kava. So kava is one of my favorite herbs, and I want to give you some kind of, we're going to close in just a minute, so let me give you a little bit of information. So again, one of the concerns that doctors have about herbs in general, and certainly it's raised all the time in the medical journals, is the identity, and that's why we're very careful about the identity. But the other issue that could come up is that people use the wrong part of the plant, and usually because they can make more money doing so. So part of the problem with kava is not with kava root, it's the fact that they use kava stems, which is a non-traditional way of preparing kava, and it's speculated that that's the cause of the problem, not the kava root. It's the kava stem, which is a non-traditional use. So the bottom line is that kava is generally safe. The concern is that kava can, there's several concerns with kava. One has to do with liability, and your liability insurance may not be covered by kava. Similarly, the kava supplier may not have liability coverage for kava. And so the reason that I don't recommend kava at the present time for professional use is basically you don't have insurance coverage, and so the problem is that that's a liability to your practice. It's not the kava root itself is not a liability, but recommending professionally kava can be a liability due to the legal pharmaceutical legal industrial complex that we live in. So bottom line is one of the things you have to make sure of. Also about even good kava product is that it's not excessively sedating. And this is, again, why we recommend herbs and drugs 2 hours, 2 hours apart. Okay, so that concludes today's workshop today. One of the things that we're interested in Health Concerns is combining modern research and ancient wisdom. And really, that's one of the special capabilities that we have here at Health Concerns. And there's really no better topic in terms of combining modern research and ancient wisdom than herb-drug interactions. We use ancient herbs and how do we use them in the modern age? That's really the question and the challenge. Again, what's unique about Health Concerns is our knowledge of American patients. So we know that there's a lot of, Health Concerns was actually the first company to make Chinese herbs in the United States, but now there is much greater choice, but what is unrivaled is our knowledge of American patients. And then our goal is to be the partner in your practice. So by providing the best quality herbal formulas along with the best quality of information as well as our herbal helpline, you can basically get the excellent results that you deserve in your practice. So in order to access our herbal helpline, you can call 1-800-233-9355 extension 105, or you can reach us by email at herbalist@healthconcerns.com. So if you have a quick question, you can contact us by phone. If it's a case history, we would strongly recommend that you submit it by email so we can give it the attention it deserves. Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you online.